You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. That's right, folks. It is still movie season, and we are talking all about a whodunit. That's right, folks. We are going on a train ride. We are going to go further than we've gone before and follow the trail of the Orient Express and find out about the murder on the Orient Express, the newest remake of the Agatha Christie tale. And did we like it? Did it go off the rails, or did it, you know, stay right on track? You know, we'll find out. And we have a great crew to talk all about it. And speaking of that, a true man of mystery himself, a true who's who, a detective beyond no other domains himself. Let us bring in Mr. Howdy himself, Mr. Mike Gordon.
All aboard! Howdy.
That is a new one. I like it.
Yes, this is, well, you know, getting in the spirit of being on the train.
Exactly. And, you know, train rides are, you know, the one thing with this movie, the food on this movie alone was worth getting on that train for. You know, it's just like, just everything looked so pristine and so perfect. And it's just like, and that's the way people used to travel throughout the world. And it's just amazing. You know, now everyone's just like rushing around in cars or by plane, you know, and just seeing how luxurious it was riding on the train, you know, between the Middle East and into Europe. It was just amazing to see. And I can't wait to talk about this one. This one's near and dear to my heart, so it should be a lot of fun. And so, you know, we definitely want to hear from you guys at home and, you know, find out what you guys thought. Please write us. ESOpodcast@gmail.com, or of course call us at 404-963-9057 and let us know what you think. We definitely would love to hear from you guys. What are your thoughts, Mike? You know, how's things been?
Things are great. You know, I mean, look, I mean, it's been crazy because I didn't realize that November was going to be like every week's a new movie for me. Where, you know, I'm going, we went to see, of course, Thor last weekend, and then the weekend after that, or just recently, we saw Murder on the Orient Express. Next weekend, we've seen Justice League. The weekend after that, we're not doing a show about this next one, but I'm almost positive I'm going to see Coco, the Pixar movie. So in November, boom, every weekend's a movie. So that's pretty awesome. But what I really found was interesting this week, this past week that was announced, was something by, speaking of Pixar, something by Disney. Of course, Disney has announced that, they announced obviously that they are going to have their own streaming service, and they want it to succeed, so they are putting Star Wars on their new streaming service, and they are going to have a new live-action Star Wars series that's going to be exclusive on the streaming service, and in conjunction with that, they also announced that there was going to be a new Star Wars movie trilogy with director Rian Johnson, who is directing, or has finished directed, I would imagine, but he's responsible for The Last Jedi, which is coming out, which, you know, that's sort of like having a series renewed for season two before season one has even aired. Like, Disney must be confident in Rian Johnson and his work with Last Jedi, so much so that they're giving him a 3 Star Wars movie deal. So this is not just like a Star Wars story that we've gotten in the past with Rogue One and the upcoming Solo movie, but we're getting a new trilogy that's going to take place somewhere else in the Star Wars universe. Not exactly, no huge details yet. We don't know if it's going to tie in to Last Jedi. We don't know when it takes place. We don't know much about it. It's just that I think he called it a blank canvas on this new trilogy. So it's pretty amazing that we are. I think Disney's goal is to have 2 Star Wars movies come out a year in addition to this TV series. And my question to you, Mike Faber, Is that too much Star Wars?
Yes.
Is it? I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, for those of us who grew up and had to wait 4 years, 3 years between movies, and sometimes we would get a novel or we'd get the comics and that's all we had. This seems so alien to us, to me anyway, that we would get all of a sudden, you know, we would have Star Wars on all the time.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, don't get me wrong, folks. I love the Star Wars stuff. I've been loving Rebels this whole season, the whole series, actually, even. But I've liked where they're going with it. You could tell they're wrapping things up with that. And it was interesting to see, you know, how this is carrying through the evolution of the characters and everything. And then you get, right now, you're getting one new Star Wars movie a year. I'm almost afraid of too much. And I know some people out there can never be too much favor. You're full of it, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, I'm worried about overkill. You know, it got that way for me a little bit, and other people are going to scream with Doctor Who a little bit. When they had Doctor Who, they had Sarah Jane, they had Torchwood. It was almost too much in some ways. And I'm almost, you know, we've talked about comics. We've talked about, you know, them flooding the market with it. And I think I really am afraid Disney's going to be trying to flood the market with Star Wars. And I don't know if that's going to water down the market or if it's going to, you know, take away from the mystique of Star Wars. Because Star Wars to me is special. And, you know, it's something that I care for with all my heart.
Obviously, when Disney purchased Star Wars purchased Lucasfilm from George, they were, you know, I don't think it's a surprise that they wanted to do stuff with it. So, and in true Disney fashion, we knew they were going to do a lot with it. We knew that they were going to, you know, incorporate it in the theme park, and that's going to open in 2019, or that's scheduled to. The streaming service is scheduled to open, you know, to launch in by the end of 2019 with a Star Wars series on it. There's going to be other stuff too. They announced, I think, a TV series adaptation of Monsters, Inc., as well as an original entry from Marvel. I'm assuming it's going to take place in the MCU. So there will be a Marvel series on the Disney streaming service as well. So that's coming out. And then, of course, now we don't have any time frame on the new trilogy, but I'm guessing that they'll probably want it to be at the very latest, they'll want it to be in 2019 as well. And of course, with Rian Johnson now directing, you know, Last Jedi, he must have liked his experience enough to be all in with Star Wars. So for the next, you know, few years, that's all he's going to be doing. If he's working on a new trilogy, then he's all in, which means for at least a decade, he is devoting his life, a decade of his life, he's devoting to Star Wars, which is not, you know, for something you don't personally own, that's a lot of time for an artist to do. And none of us have seen Last Jedi. It looks pretty cool from everything that we've seen. A new trailer was released not too long ago. So it looks impressive. And who doesn't? Like, if someone asked me, Mike, would you want to spend the next, you know, 10 years working on Star Wars? I'd be, hell yeah. So I get it, you know, the appeal. But, you know, the appeal of it and the actual, like, doing it is two different things. And I'm curious to see where this is going. Obviously, it's probably going to be different enough that it won't repeat itself. So I'm guessing from everything that they're giving us, it's not going to feel repetitive. So I think that's the key. Disney's really good about that. You know, they're able to put stuff, they're able to have like a TV show and a movie franchise go at the same time. Well, in all conjunction with meeting, you know, characters in the parks and all that kind of stuff. They're really good at coordinating all this. So I'm guessing that this is going to be something that will still be taxing for them, but I think it, you know, it still has amazing possibilities. I mean, right now we're getting 2 to 3 movies of Marvel a year, And we're getting, you know, multiple TV series from Marvel a year. So that's way more than we're getting that's being proposed for Star Wars. And I don't think we feel burnt out of Marvel yet, do we? Do you?
Inhumans showed me that, yeah, possibly I am.
Yeah, but that's one thing among, like, out of all the Marvel stuff that's aired this year, there's been, at the beginning of the year we had, we had Spider-Man. Before Spider-Man, it was what? Was it
Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Guardians of the Galaxy 2, right? So Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Spider-Man. We also had Defenders. And then we recently had Thor. We're getting Punisher. And all that with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then, so maybe Immortals was like the one series too many?
I'm thinking possibly. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. I'm worried about Overkill, but... As you and I have talked either both on the podcast or off the air, I'm not watching as much TV as I used to. So, you know, I'm trying to be very generous with my time and figuring out what I'd like to watch, what I don't want to. And I'm worried that, you know, I'm starting to think, you know, of course, we all love Thor out, you know, we talked about it all last week and, you know, we enjoyed the movie and, you know, you thought it was a little too humorous, but, you know, do you think, you know, after, you know, they're done with Infinity War, some of these movies that are going to be coming our way, they're not characters I care about as much. Like in... It'll be interesting to see what they do, but that also gets into, you know, possibly why Disney's looking to buy, you know, 21st Century Fox too, because that's one of the big rumors going around this last week that they're sitting at the table talking about, you know, about that. And that could mean for, at least for Marvel and such, that would mean maybe X-Men, Fantastic Four, and some of its other characters coming into the MCU. And that would be really, really big. There's other things, you know, other, you know, franchises and such that Disney is possibly looking to get, especially with the streaming service. The one big, you know, reward if they buy Fox is The Simpsons and Futurama. Those libraries are huge.
Yep.
And, you know, and especially with Disney starting their own streaming service, they just announced today that they're going to be, the Disney streaming service is going to be half the price of Netflix. And so, you know, right there, they're trying to go up against the big boys. And they also announced that, I think Daredevil season 3 is going to be the last series they're going to make for Netflix. After that, it's all moving over to the Disney streaming. So you're going to lose that also.
Well, let me ask you this. Like, as a person who's not watching as much TV, but as a person who's enjoying Rebels, and I am as well, it's been amazing. They certainly are seeming to burn those. They seem to want to burn that season off before Last Jedi airs. So I don't know if the timing is going to work out there, but I've noticed that they were airing like a bunch of episodes two at a time. Now they've gone to one at a time. So I don't know when it's going to end, but it's going to be a bittersweet ending when it does, I'm sure. But as a person who enjoys Rebels, who enjoys the Star Wars and everything, as well as other stuff, is the Disney streaming channel right now, with everything you know about Disney and the streaming service that they're going to provide, is that going to be something that you're going to look at getting?
No. I probably won't, not at first at least. You know, eventually, possibly. Because, you know, I'm a Disney-phile. I love classic Disney. You know, in college, you know, I studied animation. I studied, you know, the art history behind it. I studied the techniques, all that. And ever since I was a little kid, Disney, Disney, Disney. And, you know, I've been to Disney World. I had Disneyland season tickets when I lived in California. So, yeah, Disney is important to me. And it's always been part of my life. But... I don't know if I want to start paying on top of cable, on top of Netflix, on top of other things we're paying for monthly, if I want to now add Disney to it. And, you know, there's all these other different streaming services. That's why I haven't started on CBS, you know, because I don't want to have to pay another subscription fee to watch, you know, to watch Star Trek, you know, so I'm have, you know, my money is tight right now, you know, just trying to put everything together. And it's, even if I cut the cable, it's going to start adding up to almost be as much as having cable in some ways. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. No, I do think for the value, I think the right now, I mean, everything I know about the Disney service sounds like it's going to be a winner for me. I definitely can see myself subscribing to that for like, even if, okay, so even if all it was a library of everything that Disney's done in the last, whatever it has been, 60, 70 years, that's still worth it to me. To be able to watch any Disney thing I want to at any time would be awesome. Add to that a new Star Wars series, a new Marvel series, plus the guarantee of anything that's new from Disney being available. That's pretty amazing. So, and it's going to be half the price of Netflix. That's pretty cool. And if they get all the Fox programming as well, then phew, man, that's going to be amazing. So I think that it will be worth it. Like you, I did not subscribe to CBS because it just wasn't compelling enough for me. But I think Disney and mix in, it's more money too. But I could see myself going, oh yeah, Disney, I'll do that. But you know, I mean, especially if it's like $5 a month, you know, it's a $5 a month. That's not even a sandwich for me. So.
No. And you're right. You are completely right. If it's automatically withdrawn, you wouldn't even notice it. It's not even a trip to Starbucks nowadays or going to, you know, pick up lunch. It's half of that. So yeah, if it's only $5, you never know. I might consider it. But then, you know, you also have other services starting up. They're announcing a big time push with YouTube TV lately. I know, you know, this will replace cable and, you know, and I'm not holding my breath on that, but it's what the market is going towards, is more of an a la carte system where you could just watch whatever you want. It's also what's going to put DVRs out, and, you know, DVRs are going to become part of the past because you'll just be able to say, oh, you know, talk into a remote and go, hey, I want to watch the newest episode of, you know, Flash, or I want to watch the newest episode of Daredevil, or I want to watch Outlander or whatever. And you just, it'll bring it all up. It'll just be a system like that. It won't be channel 553 anymore and stuff like that. It's just going to be more of whenever you want it and such. Great example is what Netflix is doing, you know, with how they just put the whole series out there. We talked last week about Stranger Things. And, you know, how we binge watched it. And that's what a lot of people are going to do. And it's going to become more and more like that. They're going to film a whole season at a time. Boom. And then it's going to just be out there. They'll do the same thing with the Star Wars stuff, that you'll just be able to binge watch all the Star Wars episodes on the stream, on Star Wars streaming site, on the Disney streaming.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it definitely is a good point. But, you know, but that's just the future of it. And that's where entertainment's going. And that's, the big networks are horrified about that. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see where it goes. You know, eventually, you know, how we do on Earth Station Who, you know, plug, our sister podcast, we talk about Doctor Who on it. Eventually they'll just put out the whole season of Doctor Who through the BBC streaming service. Or a whole season of Red Dwarf, or a whole season of Broadchurch, or whatever you want to watch. That's the way it's going to be. And you'll just, you know, watch as many as you can at a time. But, you know, the thing with doing, you know, like stuff like that, I don't know what that does to rewatchability. You know, I've watched, you know, the whole thing of Stranger Things. I don't know how quickly I'm going to go back and watch season one and season two again. Maybe in a couple of years, but not for quite some time. And I know there are people out there who are as obsessed and watching it over and over again already. I know some people who've watched it 3 times already.
I've actually restarted rewatching The Good Place on Netflix again because I love it so much. So I get it. You know, I mean, obviously it's good to rewatch stuff. here, taking it back to Star Wars, though. So if a Star Wars, whether it's the Rian Johnson series or whether it's a TV series, if you could choose where it takes place, like in the Star Wars universe, any thoughts that would be more compelling to you than others? Would it like, would, do you want a prequel? Do you want it in the future? Do you want it like, you know, over on like the adventures of, the clones or, you know, Jar Jar's people? Where do you see like, a TV series that you would want to watch? Where would it take place?
That's a good question. I don't know. I would like to see something, you know, if it's a new series or such, probably I'd like to see it take place, you know, even further in the future, maybe like another 30 years or something, you know, Star Wars, the Next Generation or something.
Gotcha. So like in 100 years, yeah. not so long ago.
Exactly. But in a galaxy far, far away still.
Still, right. Yeah, sure.
You know, something like that. I'm not a big fan of prequels, you know, because there's existing history already. And, you know, then you mess up with, you know, the animated series did great with it between, you know, Clone Wars and then what they did with Rebels, because animated, they could tie in the technologies and they, you know, tie it into the look and feel of the series. But, you know, like what they're doing with Star Trek, with, you know, Discovery, you know, with what they're doing now, the technology in that show looks like it blows what the original series looked like. And it just doesn't make sense to me.
And yeah, it's one of the tricks of going back, because yeah, I mean, it's never, you have new technology to make stuff, so it's going to look sharper, but then it's going to make the other stuff that you're leading up to look not as good.
Exactly. And that's what bothers me. And I think that's going to be, you know, an issue that they're going to do. Then again, I would love to see, and I'm going to contradict myself with what I just said. I wouldn't mind.
You're allowed.
I know. It's my show. I could do it. So the thing is, I wouldn't mind seeing them go back 1,000 years to the, you know, the old Jedi Order when they were dealing with the Sith. You know, that they, you know, that they'd done in the books and the video games and such, you know, with Star Wars. I think that would be right. Pretty cool too. And, you know, the height of, you know, the battles between the Jedi and the Sith. And I think that could be pretty cool too. But then you get into the whole technology thing again. So you just got to, it's a double-edged sword, my friend.
Yeah, well, like you, I mean, I'm not a big fan of prequels either, although I will say there's exceptions, and the show, the series Rebels is definitely an exception. I enjoy the heck out of that show, much more than I did Rogue One, and I hope the ending of Rebels is not as grim as the ending of Rogue One. But then again, you know, you look at the events that happen in Star Wars, A New Hope, and you're kind of like, well, how can it end? You know, but... So that's going to be interesting to see. And you kind of put yourself in a box when you do prequels. But to me, there's a lot of area after Return of the Jedi that seems to be really open between if a TV series or even, you know, a trilogy helps kind of takes place in the area between after Return of the Jedi and before Force Awakens. I think you can do a lot with that, and that I don't have. That's not really a prequel per se. I mean, it is to the new stuff, but it's still to me fresh enough of an area where we don't know a lot, where it could be kind of interesting.
Exactly. It'll be interesting to see where they go. You know, I have faith in that they'll do something cool, but you know, I'm going to take it as it comes. And like I said, I'm not going to be a first subscriber to the network. You know, maybe within 6 months, a year. We'll see.
We'll see.
Exactly. That's the story of my day. We'll see. So it's a cool thing. But yeah, there's just so much going on with that, with the new streaming services and Disney, you know, trying to gobble up the rest of Hollywood. You know, they're just going to put a big, you know, mouse ears on the Hollywood sign, you know, and just get it over with.
You know what? As long as they're doing what they're doing and everything's good, I don't have a problem with anything that they're doing.
Well, that's awesome then. So I think, you know, we got a lot of good stuff coming up, and Disney, you know, is just growing and, you know, changing and seeing where it goes, and let's have fun with it. And, you know, there's so much crud going on in the world, you know, people accusing people of things they've done in the past and things that, you know, going on with politics and the world. And it's just things like talking about Disney with you, sir, is a pleasure because it keeps your mind off of that kind of stuff. And I appreciate
exactly
that.
Well, you know, that's what Disney does best. It brings the magic so that, you know, it's escapism to help you deal with the balance out some of the crap that's out there. So you can actually whistle while you're going to work. You can whistle zippity doo dah.
Oh, I do that every day. People just look at me like I'm nuts.
And they're not wrong.
Exactly. So it's a good thing. We want to hear from you guys, of course. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
My, oh my, what a wonderful day. Plenty of sunshine hit my way. Zippity-doo-dah.
Hey, Kevin.
Hey, Cornflake.
So we host the Flopcast.
We cover nerd and geek subjects of all types, but this is sort of a sillier, goofier side of geekdom, I'd say.
We love to talk about music, especially funny music.
We talk about comic books, conventions.
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, yeah. I'd say if you're going to put the Flopcast in Brady Bunch terms, we're like the Cousin Oliver of podcasting. And we do a ridiculous new Flopcast episode every week.
What is wrong with us?
We really have nothing else to do. We're part of the Earth Station One Podcast Network.
And you can find us at flopcast.net.
It's the truth. Mm-hmm. It's actual. Mm-hmm. Everything is satisfactual. Zip-a-dee-doo-dah. Zip-a-dee-a. Wonderful feeling.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are here now with friend of the show, Bethany Kessler. Welcome to ESO.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Welcome to the station officially. I think people might have heard your voice on our show before because we've recorded some panels that you've been on. So, but this is the official visit of you on the station.
Yep. I'm excited to be here.
We like awesome. To call this ESO hazing. I mean, yeah, this is where we meet the guests. Yeah.
For those people who may not have attended one of your panels at Dragon Con, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My name is Bethany Kessler. I'm a historian. I also do book, movie, TV show reviews on my blog under my pen name, DJ Gray. I also write short stories and novels in the science fiction, speculative fiction, fantasy arena.
Awesome. Awesome. When did you write your first novel?
My first novel was written at the age of 8.
That's early.
It was terrible.
She's an overachiever. Look at her already.
It was terrible, but I had a lot of fun, and it was something I knew I kind of wanted to keep doing. So my first published novel is still currently being in edit hell. So, but I do have a short story that came out in an anthology at the beginning of the month. It's a very fun Cthulhu mythos story. And the Mad Visions of Alhazred by Alban Lake Publishing.
Awesome. So, we will definitely make sure we have show notes to all that stuff so that people can check out your work. What do you look for when you're writing a story? What kind of, is there a particular genre that you feel, or do you try to go outside all genres?
I really don't like being pigeonholed into a specific niche.
Excellent.
So I kind of just do the fun, I'm going to take these two characters and throw them in a blender and see what happens. So it's kind of experimental. It's not always the best way to write, but it can be a lot of fun. And you learn a lot about what works and what doesn't for you.
Do you excel in doing a lot of research for your stories?
I do. Like I said, I'm a historian, so research is kind of my thing.
Sure.
I also became a historian because history is literally the greatest soap opera that never ends. Because essentially that's people. So I'll do some initial research, and then once I get into more nitty-gritties, draft 2, draft 3, then I'll start fine-tuning the research.
Isn't it amazing how many things, stories, novels, adaptation, movies, TV series, made for TV movies are based on real events, but yet they change things. And you're kind of like, for those people that know, you're kind of like, why did you have to change stuff? Because this stuff is good gold as is.
Yeah, that's one of the things that cracks me up every time I look at, every time I do panels on period shows, and people ask me, are they just going over the top with this? Are they overdoing it with some of like the violence or the sensuality? And I'm like, no, if anything, some of them are underplaying that. I'm like, right. Let me tell you about the Victorians.
Are there particular periods of history where you really hit your groove?
I have specialties in the Crusades and in the Cold War.
Very nice. Very different, or I guess. Maybe you tell me. Maybe there's a lot more similarities than I'm thinking of.
I'm a historian. Justification is my thing. So I can literally just draw you a roadmap.
Right.
And tell you how they're all connected. Like one of my current favorite TV shows says, everything is connected. So, but they're big conflicts that pretty much took over the entire world, at least the world as we knew it, and kind of shifted and rearranged a lot of things, and the world was different after them. Mm.
Yes, absolutely. Speaking of earth-shattering, world-changing events, how long have you been going to Dragon Con?
I think since 2010. Yeah, 2010 was the first year that I was able to go.
Gotcha. That's 17 years, right?
Not quite. I think only 7 or 8.
I'm sorry. Yes,
yeah, Mike, you're getting a little ahead of yourself there.
I am, wasn't I? So, but still, that's
not yet.
Yeah, that's it. But so how long? I got confused there. What attracted you to Dragon Con? Have you been to other cons before, or was that like your first experience with a convention?
I'd been at convention type things before, but nothing nerdy and nothing on the scale. So it was really kind of my introduction to this is how you con. And so I actually came because my best friend was working with Mike Stackpole and Aaron Elston, and I am a giant Rogue Squadron and Wraith Squadron nerd. Nice. And she promised me that I could shake hands with them if I managed to make it down to Atlanta. So that was the initial draw. And then afterwards I was like, oh, but we have all of this other cool, fun stuff. And then I tripped over a couple of track directors, and that was kind of that.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you. So how soon was it that you did your first panel?
2 years after I started going.
Wow, that's pretty good. That took me a long time before I did my first panel. I think over 10 years. So good for you. You got right in there.
Well, I think it helped that Mike Stackpole was looking at some of the different things that, you know, his minions could do and could offer, and was like, hey, if you can do it, that's awesome. So Mike gave me my first shot, and then Kellen with Am Sci-Fi gave me my second, and then I tripped over Gary and Joe.
Yes, as we all do. But what a wonderful, strange trip it is.
And it everyone
really is. There's nothing like it.
And everyone knows once Joe and Gary get their claws into you, we are stuck for life.
Yes, absolutely.
Pretty much.
Absolutely. Well, we know it can get kind of crazy, especially at those panels. Are there any cool memories that you have in particular that stand out for being on a panel at Dragon Con?
I think one of my favorites, at least this past year, was when the alternate history track gave me an honorary doctorate.
Because
The panel, the panel I was sitting on, I was the only female. And I was the only person without a doctorate. So the track was just like, no, we're just going to put the doctor by your name because symmetry. I was like, honorary doctorate from an alt history track. That's pretty cool.
that's suitable. Yes. That's awesome. Yeah, I like the alternate history track. Those guys are fun. Key was a great talent. Yes. And well, very cool. Well, we're gonna do of course sort of like a panel here when we talk about the movie, because we'll have a few other people join us, so it'll be very reminiscent. That's kind of the vibe that we go for here, so you are welcome and to participate in that. But before you do, you have to go through the geek seat.
Oh, okay.
So
if you insist.
So well, we do. Mike, if you are ready.
Dude, I'm always ready. You know that.
Yes, I do.
Okay, Bethany.
Is this your favorite part of the show?
It is, because we get to tie up our guests. It's awesome.
That's true. We do. It is. It is fun to tie them to the chair. I admit.
And your tying skills, Mike, have gotten so much better. It's just so impressive.
Well, you know,
I am impressed by these knots.
Exactly. He's just a wizard at knots now. We just might have to have a panel on Mike's knots of the geek seat.
I can't do math, but I can do knots.
Exactly. See? And we don't and we don't mean the garlic knots. We mean these rope knots, you know. It's always better this way.
Hey, I can take care of some garlic knots too.
Okay. That's good to know. Okay, we've lulled her into a sense of security. She's giggling.
Absolutely.
Let's get started with the geek seat. This is perfect. All right, Bethany, are you ready for your first question in the geek seat?
Absolutely.
All right, Bethany, what was your favorite geek out moment?
My favorite geek out moment is tripping over a cord at Dragon Con and being caught by Burt Ward.
Wow. Holy rescue, Batman.
Exactly.
That is awesome. So tell us about that one. How did that come about?
Well, Adam West and Burt Ward were at Dragon Con, and that was probably the single greatest experience of my existence. Since I grew up with Adam West Batman as my Batman. And so I knew that I was just going to all of those panels. I was going to stand in line. I was going to do whatever I could. Despite being in college and not having the money for the photo, I was just going to be at every single panel I could. And I was actually running late for one, since I had to open the room for Mike, since he does the workshops and we were minioning that year. So I was running a little late. And of course, Mike Stackpole thought it was hilarious that I was like having this geek meltdown over Batman and Robin and not over him when I first met him. And I was like, Mike, you're not Batman. I love you, but you're not Batman. So I had been running up there and I had just like kind of just tripped. And then the guests had been passing like right by me, and Burt Ward just kind of stuck a hand out, steadied me, smiled, and kept walking. And I was like, I have just been touched by greatness.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's look at the other side of that then. What was the most disappointing geek out moment?
The Prince Caspian movie. Just everything about that movie was a huge disappointment. It was a horrible adaptation, and I think I walked out of that movie theater like angrily crying because it was that bad.
No, I could totally see that. I truly could truly see that.
We've all been there.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Especially those darn Narnia movies. The first one was great. Then it just went off track. No pun intended.
Oh, were there other movies besides The Horrible Prince Caspian? Because I kind of blocked the rest of them out.
It's my ranting. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. What geeks you out the most?
Oh, man. That's like, sure. Pick a hard question.
They only get harder, my dear. And the ropes get tighter.
What geeks me out the most? Probably finding like-minded nerds.
Sure.
My fandoms are huge, so I will nerd out just as hard over Batman and Robin as I will nerd out over 15th century like church minutiae, little bits of church theory and doctrine. So it's basically when I find that other person who is also equally nerdy, I think that's the best geek out moment. True. And what to really, really geeks me out the most.
Totally understand that. But what turns your geek off?
So much. The nerd, I think it's the sometimes people challenging nerd cred and the gatekeepers. Oh, you can't be a true nerd until you've done this. I'm like, no, you can still be a true nerd. So the people who are like, oh, you're not a real Star Wars fan until you've seen all of them and the specials and this. And I'm like, yes, I've seen all of those.
Mm-hmm, also, of course.
I'm like, yeah, out of the two of us, which one is on speaking terms with Tim Zahn? Not you? Okay.
What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
That's probably, let's see. Londo Mollari. Yeah. Londo Mollari from Babylon 5.
Oh, really?
Nice.
That's a good one. I think that's the first time with that one.
I just Londo and his arc and his everything and the way he got to be where he was at the end. And I would just want to sit there and give him a lot of booze and just listen to him talk.
Okay. Fair enough. What fictional character would you not like to meet?
Sherlock Holmes.
Really? Do tell.
There comes a point where, and especially with writers, like with writers and profilers, like you don't want someone to like look at you and like be able to tell you everything. Like, it's, you know, there's like a level of comfort with, yes, I know that this is actually a thing, but I'm going to pretend it's not a thing. And Sherlock Holmes never met a self-delusion he couldn't pop.
And he'd have you figure it out in 30 seconds flat anyway, so.
Yeah.
I could see that. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
As far as poses go, I think it's the Captain America pose. With the arms on the hips and feet, level with your shoulders.
Oh, of course.
I was just thinking, man, nobody like goes after the pose part of that question very often. And
we have it now, Mike. There you go.
Yes, I'm like, wow, yes, I think we've got our quota for the year. One.
Or one.
The pose is the easiest part of that question.
Well, it is an or question, so you don't have to do all of them.
You don't have to do all, no. If you want to, that's fine. That's extra credit, but
Yes, but we're all geeks, so we know how completists work. So yes.
I was gonna say, as far as phrases go, pretty much anything from Krull or The Princess Bride.
Marriage.
Oh, you laugh. My my father has continually threatened that that's how he's going to start all of our wedding ceremonies. And we're just like, no, Dad, just no.
That could be awesome. What is your ideal geek occupation?
My ideal geek occupation is the one I'm doing now, only with like a lot more money. Is writing and going to cons and getting to talk and see all the people.
Understandable. Truly understandable. What geek occupation would you not like to do?
I really suck at math, so I would really be a terrible, terrible rocket scientist.
Me too.
Space yeah, I was cool. going to say.
But I would be a terrible rocket scientist.
The guy who tied you up would be too. He'd be other. Mike would be able to tether that rocket down, but don't get him to do the math for it.
If it didn't fall apart, it would go underneath the earth.
Don't say it too loud. Irwin Allen might be listening and go, oh, that's a great adventure. All right, Bethany, are you ready for your final question?
All right. Hit me with your best shot.
Oh, we'll take it away. What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
Ooh.
Remember, we are somewhat family friendly.
Yeah, no, my ultimate geek fantasy probably getting to hang out with the cast of B5.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
At least the ones that are still around, sadly. But yeah, getting to hang out with the cast of B5, since that was, everybody else had Star Trek or Star Wars. My one true sci-fi show was B5.
That is awesome.
Very awesome.
The number of times that I deliberately did not do homework in order to stay up late so that I could do homework while also watching the episodes air on TV, TNT, you know, was kind of ridiculous.
That is awesome. Well, Bethany, you have officially made it through the geek seat.
Huzzah!
Congratulations, you're one of us now. Mr. Mike Gordon, tell the young lady what she's won.
You'll have won a lifetime subscription to the ESO Network, a value easily worth $53.30.
Hey, that's awesome.
Hey, we're going up in the world.
Well, you know, it is relative, and it does decrease in value as you get closer to Earth. So.
So we'll just stay far away from Earth then.
There you go.
The further away you get from Earth, the more it increases. That's the way you do it. Just stand on that other side of the station, in other words. Okay. That is awesome.
She can't stand. She's not coming out of the chair.
Oh, that's true.
We need it for the next segment. And then, we'll see.
We'll see. So we never see. You know, more the merrier, as we like to say, up on the station. So with that being said, Bethany, since you're staying around, let's take a quick break. And we'll be back with our review of Murder on the Orient Express.
Hi, this is Michelle with the Iconic Rock Talk Show Moment, starting out with Super Deluxe Edition news, a Super Deluxe Edition of a Deluxe Edition. In honor of the Monkees' 50th anniversary this year, the folks in the archives at Rhino are super supersizing a deluxe edition that came out in 2006 called More of the Monkees. This version has 91 tracks, 55 of them are previously unreleased. It includes mono and stereo mixes of the original album, studio outtakes, the first recorded versions of Valerie, Words, Hold On Girl, and some more songs, backing tracks for other songs, including I'm a Believer, Look Out, Here Comes Tomorrow, and Sometime in the Morning, as well as others, a bonus 7-inch of a remix of I'm a Believer and the vocal version of I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. That's very close to the first record I ever owned, even though Mom kept it for me, so that's an interesting thing for me. A very unique aspect of it is some newly discovered unreleased live music from the Monkees. This was recorded in Arizona in '67. There are 10 songs, Some of them came from their 1966 debut album, I Want to Be Free, and Papa Jean's Blues is on there. Also covers, Ray Charles' I Got a Woman, and You Can't Judge a Book by the Cover by Willie Dixon. More evidence they're putting out there to refute the myth that the Monkees were a complete studio creation with no musical talent of their own. This box set is a limited edition, 4,500 numbered copies in a hardbound 7x7 box. It is available exclusively from monkees.com and rhino.com. It will be available December 15th, but you can pre-order it now. And I know somebody at ESO headquarters will be happy about this. Funko announced its Pop Rock Series 3, including Jerry Garcia, Kurt Cobain, and Elton John. Gotta say, there is an impressive amount of detail. Jerry Garcia is playing the Tiger guitar, and I mean, they reproduced it so faithfully. The standard Kurt Cobain figure is wearing the green striped t-shirt. There's a variant with the tan sweater for FYE and the black sweater for Hot Topic. The Elton John figure comes in a red, white, and blue outfit. There is a glitter version of the red, white, and blue outfit for FYE. It also comes in a white suit that some people may remember from the cover of his original first greatest hits album. That's the first album I ever owned myself, so I got a soft spot for that outfit. It's faithful down to the little lapel pin. I think it was Twitter this past week. I heard somebody call these precious moments for nerds, and I just love that description. And lastly, January 2019, Hamilton will play a three-week engagement in Puerto Rico with creator Lin-Manuel Miranda returning to the title role for the first time since he left Broadway in July of 2016. Lin-Manuel Miranda is also executive producer of the Showtime adaptation of The Kingkiller Chronicles, based on the book series by Patrick Rothfuss, and he's also composing the music for that series. The man is nonstop. This has been the Iconic Rock Talk Show moment. Check out the blog at iconicrocktalkshow.wordpress.com, and we will see you next week.
Well, the ESO crew went back to the movies this week. We're going to spend a lot of time in the theater this month. We've got a movie review next month, and there's a couple other movies coming out that I want to see as well. But this one, this is a little different for us. This is not a hugely, one considered a geek-oriented movie, but yet it's something that I think we all really strongly wanted to go see and talk about. So very cool. We're, of course, reviewing Murder on the Orient Express, 1917, right. Of course, Mike. 2017, the version directed by Kenneth Branagh. And we've got, of course, Bethany is still stuck in the geek seat.
Have your arms started letting go?
No, I'm quite comfortable.
Oh, okay. Well,
Mike, okay. Your knots are not as good as we were giving you credit for before, sir.
Well, I think it's I think a lot of people are just getting used to this kind of stuff. It's the kind of people that we get in the seat, you know. it speaks to them. And of course, we have our two movie folks with us. Ashley Pauls is back with us.
Hello. Thanks for having me back. It's exciting. Howdy. 2 weeks in a row.
2 weeks. Yep. And we're not stopping. This train is keep on going, right? So yes. We're gonna pun the hell out of this. Be warned if we haven't. Yeah, we've already started at the top of the show, so this will just continue to motor along. Okay. And of course, Alex is here.
Hey, gang. Not to derail your thought, but I think Bethany's thank you. Bethany's probably comfortable because she's in the right groove.
Of course. Of course.
I'm going to just sit over here and just bang my head against the desk.
It'll be a rhythmic thing like the train.
Exactly. It's an express way to hell.
Well, as I said before, this is, I don't know if we've ever reviewed a sort of murder mystery on the show before. And it's kind of interesting because they used to be everywhere. And of course, major motion picture murder mysteries not really done so much anymore. So this is really definitely a callback, I think, to a lot. Now, we see procedurals on TV all the time. So we're not, I mean, no, this sort of format is not alien to any of us. But I'm kind of curious as to what pulled you in to see this movie and did it show up on your radar. Ashley, we'll start with you. What kind of pulled you in? Were you interested in anything Agatha Christie before here, or?
I have read one Agatha Christie novel before, enjoyed it, but mystery's not necessarily my main genre that I gravitate to. Kind of what drew me to this one is I'm a big fan of Kenneth Branagh, and I love the all-star cast. I also love period pieces, so, and it kind of stood out to me because, like, well, here's something different. You know, I don't do mysteries a lot, and here's something with a great cast and actors I like and something a little bit different. So that's kind of what drew me in.
Excellent. Excellent. Bethany, what about you? Do you have a history with Agatha, or is this a new experience for you?
I kind of grew up with the Agatha Christie novels. So I walked into this having seen a couple of other adaptations of Murder on the Orient Express, and then having recently just reread it before the show before I saw the movie again, so I could have it fresh in my head. So I was pretty happy with it.
Now, so you've read the book. Now, Ashley, have you read this book, or you just read a Agatha Christie story?
I've read a different one. So okay. I kind of purposefully stayed away from some of the other movies and books. I thought I'll just go into this movie and just be surprised by the ending. So I would kind of like to read the book now that I've seen the movie, though.
Yeah, I haven't read any of the books, and I have seen the 1974 version of Murder on the Orient Express, but I probably saw it like not long after 1974. So to me, it'd been a long time since I'd seen it, and I didn't remember who the culprit was, who done it, so to speak. And and I thought, well, maybe I'll read it before I see the movie, or maybe I'll rewatch the 1974 version. But I decided not to do any of that because I wanted to go in fresh just to see what would happen. And I was pleasantly surprised that way. Alex, what about you? Have you seen any of the movies before? Or?
I tend to stay away from murder mysteries. It's just not my forte area. As far as Agatha Christie goes, for me, it was 10 Little Indians. Okay. Better known as And Then There Were None.
Yep.
Which is a phenomenal book. Keeps you guessing the entire time. And just a terrific ending. And I think that one has really been my only trip into the world of Agatha Christie. I have enjoyed a lot of what Kenneth Branagh has done. I love Much Ado About Nothing. His film that he did in 93, 94. And he has a knack for being able to do large movies, especially period style pieces, with huge diverse casts. And for me, one of the big things about this one was the fact that it's, you know, here are your suspects: the Green Goblin, Olaf, Ray, M from the Bond movies. You know, you just go down this list of pop culture geekery.
Aaron Burr.
Yeah, I mean, so it's all there, and that's what I was really interested in. I wanted to see all these actors that I've seen in so many other things, in a different piece, in a different style of film. Love Josh Gad as an actor, and he's a very funny actor, but I wanted to see him in a serious piece, so.
Yes, excellent. Yeah, we will talk all about the cast in a minute. Mike, what about you? Did you read the book, or were you familiar with it at all?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like with Bethany. I was a fan of the books growing up because I loved reading murder mysteries. It always, like, that's what I read, like, late at night when I was growing up. It was just, like, always, like, reading Sherlock Holmes, reading Agatha Christie, you know, reading all those, and then I started getting into the Stephen King later. So it was just a lot of fun. And then I saw the 1974 version of this movie probably around the same time you did, Mike, probably like in the around 77, 78. And
it was probably I probably saw it on TV.
Yeah. HBO all the way is how I saw it. And I loved it because, you know, the original cast had Sean Connery, Albert Finney, you know, it was just an amazing, amazing cast, and seeing this, and then later on seeing the different versions of it. And Poirot was one of my favorite detectives. I like him in some ways even more than Holmes, and just his attitude, the way he solves the mysteries and such. Because, you know, and I'll admit it here, before even I saw Murder on the Orient Express, I saw Death on the Nile, and it was Peter Ustinov as Poirot. And it was just amazing. And that's what got me even more into it. And to see the different iterations that they did it on Masterpiece Theater. They did it, you know, and now this version. And to see, you know, a new version. And Kenneth just does such an amazing work. And I am so looking forward to talking to this with all you guys.
Yeah, I definitely am a Kenneth Branagh fan. And I really thought that it would be cool that, you know, that I was glad to see that he was going back into some, you know, the murder mystery thriller kind of genre, because I really liked Dead Again, which is a movie that he did quite a few years ago now.
That was my introduction to him, actually.
Oh, really?
Oh, Dead Again? Yeah. And then Much Ado About Nothing.
And then that one, yeah, Dead Again was fantastic with the back and forth, and then between Much Ado and Henry V and all of his other Shakespeare work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I, you know, I'm a big fan of the first Thor movie too. So I'm I haven't seen him make a bad movie. So if he's made a bad one, I haven't seen it yet. So I don't think I've seen everything he's done though, but, and obviously, you know, with the theatrical background that he has, you know that the performances that he, not only that he gives, but that he gets from his actors are going to be top notch. Nobody's going to come in here and just get a paycheck. Or at least they shouldn't anyway. When you see this cast, you're like, okay, they're all in this, but they're all going to be doing something. And we're probably going to see something from them that we don't usually get a chance to see. That was compelling.
All right. I have to say this real quick though. Yeah. When I told William I was going to go see this, he says, "Oh, is that the murder mystery with Gilderoy Lockhart?"
oh, ouch.
Wow. And it was like, yes. And it's like, oh, have fun. It's like, okay. You know what he's not into.
And I must admit that I've never been I remember watching the 74 movie. I saw Death in the Nile. I saw those two on TV. I know I went to the theater to see Evil Under the Sun. And I think there was a couple of others that I saw as well. But I never dove into the books. And I didn't follow up with I'm going to say the Belgian detective and the. It's very difficult for me because my mouth just cannot say French words or even in this case or Belgian names, apparently, because I end up sounding like a stereotypical like American by saying like Hercule, you know, like, so forgive me. But the detective, and I'm going to try it now. Perrault, is that close?
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Actually,
yeah, that's close.
Yeah.
We'll go with that. All right. So, yes, to me, he didn't like, I don't know, for there was something about him that I guess his style of deduction is a little different. And I wasn't able to put a finger on it until recently. But after this movie and doing a little bit of reading and everything, I realized, A, I haven't given him much of a chance. And now I'm really interested to find out more about his some of his stories, as well as follow up with. Particularly the series that that the BBC did. I think it's the BBC, right?
David Suchet.
David Suchet.
Definitely,
right.
Definitely, definitely, definitely watch the David Suchet.
Oh, yes. Awesome stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for everybody who's played him, it seems like he's definitive, right?
He really is. Like, I walked into this movie knowing the story, and kind of, you know, I love Kenneth Branagh, been a big fan of his for years, his and Patrick Doyle and everyone that goes along with those two, as they travel and create things. But he's good. He's amazing. He's just not David Suchet.
No, and it's interesting because when you see David on the screen, that's how I pictured him in the books to the T.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just like Robert Downey Jr. is Tony Stark, David Suchet is Hercule Poirot.
Well, and that's, you know, that's interesting. The okay, so yes, like that came at a time when BBC and British television came out. I remember at the same time it was that series. It was the Miss Marple series with I believe her name was Joan Hickson, correct? And then of course the Sherlock Holmes series with Jeremy Brett. And it seems like these were all like these actors were all definitively playing these parts and would make an impact. So that, you know, whereas prior to the series, you know, Poirot doesn't have a definitive actor, I would say. There's a lot of different ones that are filling that void. But now Kenneth Branagh has to come in and step in shoes that are now like that someone else is known as the definitive actor of. So what did you guys feel about his performance and what he brought to the character? For those people who know the character, did he do the character justice? And for those people who are not sure, like, was he entertaining enough?
He was, at least in my opinion, he was better than Ustinov, because Peter Ustinov did Poirot.
Peter Ustinov played it like Peter Ustinov.
Yeah, pretty much.
He played it like Peter Ustinov. He was better than Peter Ustinov. He was definitely better than Alfred Molina, if anybody remembers that interpretation.
I am so forgetful.
And he was better, and he was definitely better than Alfred Finney. I would put him as a close second to David Suchet. It's a different interpretation, but it's not necessarily a bad one. It's just like with the Doctor Who doctors. It's not bad. It's just not my hero. But he did a good job with what he had.
I'll second that, but basically I definitely think Kenneth did a fantastic job. He made the character his own completely. And absolutely. I definitely believed him as Poirot. That was not even a question at all with it. The thing I couldn't get past was the mustache. That's, you know.
Yes. Yes. The thing, and I'm just like, does that go all the way around his head?
Exactly.
Does it literally go all the way around his head?
It's at some point it stops being a mustache and just becomes hair. So
exactly. That's where I couldn't. And then him wearing the mustache protector. In that one scene.
I love that. That was awesome. The mustache protector had sold me on the mustache.
Exactly. And it was that I could not get past was the mustache. But other than that, I think he had the character down really well. I thought the signs that he was doing in Palestine, you know, when he was solving the mystery of the missing jewels.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Was awesome. Was
and then
awesome.
The eggs.
Yes.
The eggs.
Yes. And it, like Judy, because she went to go see it with me, she turned to me and said, can we say, you know, OCD?
he does have some monkish qualities.
Oh, big time in the particular, you know, and it was just, but he was done so well. And I loved it when that scene, he had to be even. So he stepped in dung. And so he realized his step would be off. So he put the other foot in the dung.
But all that little stuff is just basically tiny little character moments that seem amusing at the time. But then you realize that, and I don't know if this is let me ask you if this is a problem with the character, because now it's sort of suggested here that his desire to solve mysteries, to you know, figure out who done it, so to speak, is because he needs that sense of balance, as opposed to he's like, it's all about justice.
I kind of saw him as a little of both. Like, he wants to restore balance to the universe. He doesn't like things kind of, he likes everything in their place. But I also saw that he does have like a sense of compassion for people. Like when he's talking to Johnny Depp's character and, you know, he makes the offer, will you help be my bodyguard? And Poirot is pretty much like, no, I will not, because he wants to help people that are innocent and seeking justice. So I saw him as somebody that cares about solving the case, but also cares about people and wanting to help people who are innocent and have been wronged. And I think that plays a lot into the final resolution of the case, which I'm sure we will talk about, where he actually puts people above maybe the cold, hard facts of the law.
Well, and part of the thing about Perot is that he doesn't see the world the same way everyone else does. And that has a lot to do with why he does the things he does. It's almost like, you know, once he figured out how to turn on certain of those little gray cells, he's never been able to turn them off. So he's seeing the world and to keep saying, he's got to divide it into, you know, this is good, this is bad, and this is justice, and this is why this always has to balance out, which is why murder is such an interesting Perot story, because you don't have a neat solution. You know, on the one hand, yes, murderers should go to jail, but on the other hand, weighing who the victim was, weighing what led all of these people to do this thing, he can't really make that choice. And it's I think one of the first times we actually see Perot really deeply, like, almost broken in that conflict. So that's why it's always this particular book has always fascinated me with the different portrayals that everyone brings to this, because they portray that each in a different fashion.
So would you say with the series of novels then and short stories that he appears in, this is a significant character moment for him? And is that probably why that this one is chosen to be adapted so much?
I think, yes. I think the other reason why it gets chosen to be adapted so much is just the simple people element to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's fascinating from the perspective of, yes, you know, you look at this majestic train that goes back and forth, you know, random people, except they're not random.
Exactly.
And as that gets revealed throughout the movie and the book, you get more and more drawn into the conflict, and you get more and more wrapped up in the story.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's, you know, it's such a classic, you know, murder mystery. You know, you're on a train, you only have a certain amount of people who could have done it. And it's just, you know, you have all the things there, and you have just happen to have the great detective who's on the train with all these possible suspects.
Yeah, that really messed up their whole plot. They would have got away from it too if it wasn't for that silly Belgian.
And his darn dog.
Exactly. But I do like the fact that, you know, and like I said, I had forgotten how it played out. So I'm watching this pretty much fresh and then trying to guess and trying to go along with the mystery and try to figure out. And at a certain point, I'm, you know, as it becomes more and more about the, you know, Colonel Armstrong and what happened to the family there, I'm like, boy, this seems like it's awfully coincidental. And by the time you utter that out loud, not that I did in the theater, but by the time you kind of think that, you're like two steps away from like going, oh, I get it now. It's not coincidence at all.
Exactly. And it's wonderful how it plays off the Lindbergh murder and kidnapping.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those, in the last segment, we talked about, things that use historical events as inspiration, but then they change things. I mean, this is one of the few cases where they played it pretty close to what actually happened, but but certain details got changed, and it made for a much more interesting and compelling story for the book itself and for the movie itself. So the whole backstory behind the Armstrongs, and then what happened with the Lindbergh kidnapping cases. It's fascinating to see how Agatha wove that all in the way she did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Because this was written in, what, it came out in, what is it, 34? Is that right? 38? No, 34. So it came out in 34. So that was pretty, well, it was a lot fresher than it is to people now.
Well, yeah.
You do wonder how many people now would be like, get the reference, you know?
Oh, I think it was in there enough that I think enough people knew that, you know, Armstrong was Lindbergh in this. So I think there was enough references to it. And I think that was part of the great thing. And I loved how they did it with the movie screen, that everyone was watching the movie in it. And then you had everybody, you know, as the different suspects when they were showing the newsreel on the movie screen and people were watching it. And then the final one, it was everyone who was on the train was watching the newsreel. Like, all right, we're going to get this guy. Yeah. That was just so well done.
Yeah, it was really fascinating to see what they chose. Because, again, I had just finished reading the book when I went to go see it last night. And just having that fresh in my memory so I could do an easier compare and contrast, it was interesting to see what was exposition in the book, which just became very like small flashes of cinematography, like a cut here, a cut there, but you still got basically all the same information. It was fantastic the way they edited and cut that movie.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And now we have to talk about the cast. Alex, who stood out for you?
Oh, so I hated everybody. I wish I was joking. There's a reason why I've been silent while you guys have been praising this film.
Okay.
One of the great things about Suchet and we haven't mentioned it, but James Coco, who also played the role in Murder by Death, have a larger build than Brenna does. And Brenna started in the film very, very small, and towards the end got big with all of the scenery he was chewing. I had a problem believing Daisy Ridley's British accent, which bothered me because she's British.
Wow.
The whole movie, I was just watching it going, I really am not liking anybody's performance. It's a beautifully shot film. But I really think that Johnny Depp had the best role because he didn't have to be in it as long. For a movie that was less than 2 hours, it really felt longer. Okay. I liked Johnny Depp in it. He was not playing his traditional, hey, look, I'm wacky kind of performance. I wanted so much more out of Daisy Ridley than I got. And the fact is that Kenneth Branagh got all the best lines in the movie because he was sleeping with the director.
Touche. Touche.
Who else would like to praise an actor from this film?
I will say I was really happy with Leslie Odom Jr.'s character just because I mean, they took his character is actually a composite of Dr. Constantine and Colonel Arbuthnot.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and which was fine because Dr. Constantine was pretty much there just to, you know, say yes and, you know, go, oh no, they stabbed him this way in the book. So I didn't really have a problem with that. I thought it was fascinating the additional dynamic that casting Leslie Odom brought, because again from the time period and their mention of America and the miscegenation laws back and forth, that added an interesting new dynamic to some of these characters that I really liked. But I think the one I had the hardest with was Mrs. Hubbard. Simply because I was like, I love Michelle Pfeiffer, but I'm looking at her going, you are absolutely 100% Linda Arden. Like, I actually didn't walk into this like having already Googled who was who in the cast. I walked into it not knowing who was going to be which part, except for Brana. But I looked at her and went, and so we know who you are.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, Ashley, what about you, since this is new for you?
I would say, I'm sorry, Alex, I'm going to have to disagree with you on Daisy Ridley. She was actually one of the highlights for me. I liked her in this. I wish that she'd been given even more screen time and dialogue, but I mean, because I really liked her in The Force Awakens, so I've been kind of watching her to see, mm-hmm. you know, how is she going to perform going on in Hollywood, and I think she does have a good future ahead of her. I liked seeing her in this in a little bit different role, a little bit darker side. And my other favorite character, I actually really like Josh Gad's performance. I was mostly familiar with him like as a comedic actor and doing funny voice work, so I was really curious to see him in a serious role, and I thought he did really well, and so I'm excited. Hopefully this will open up some more doors for him for some more nuanced performances, some more serious stuff, because I thought he did a good job jumping into this drama and kind of showing a new side of his range. So I was just going to say, those are the two that stood out to me.
With what Josh Gad was given for this role, he did a great job. He did a fine job for what he was given. He could have been given so much more. Daisy Ridley could have been given so much more.
And that was kind of one of the things that was a little bit of a drawback. Because you do have such a huge cast, it felt mm-hmm. like you don't get to dwell too much with each of these actors. And you have so many fine, fine performers in this movie that... I wish there was more time for each one. Of course, it would have been a much longer movie, but it's hard to see so little of these fantastic performers.
And in your review that you posted on ESO Network, you actually mentioned the thought of it being possibly better as a, I believe you said this, possibly better as a, maybe a TV miniseries.
Yes. I think
to stretch it out.
Yeah, definitely not like a full season of a TV show, but like a 3-4 hour like BBC special. I thought that would have been fantastic. I don't know if they could have gotten the same cast to do like an event TV series, but I think that would have been really cool just to give it a little more time to breathe and to give these performers a little bit more time to show off their range.
Right.
Yeah, I think I think each one of them has gets to have a scene or two with Brenna, which makes it like those scenes, I think, to me, worked really well. But then they don't get to really interact with one another that much in there. But then again, we're seeing it from the detective's point of view. I mean, it is about solving the mystery, so it's not really like the more that you see from the others, the more that's going to like, you know, tip the hand of what's going on. So I kind of get the way the structure is, but it is kind of unfortunate that you've got all these great actors together and they don't get to do much with one another, but they all got to really, you know, interact with Kenneth really well, like the scenes where he's interrogating them and others, like the scenes where, you know, the scene before Johnny Depp's character dies, you know, like he has a scene with him. Like everybody made sure that they all got a scene with Kenneth, like before, you know, the end, which I thought was most of those held up for me. I did like Michelle Pfeiffer a lot, actually. I hadn't seen her in anything in a while, so to me, I was like, oh, she doesn't seem as rusty as you would think. I also want to point out the one that kind of surprised me. I wasn't aware that she was in it, but she kind of just stood out for me as like just almost stealing the scenes with her and Judy Dench was Olivia Colman. Like, that's not easy to do when Judy Dench is on the screen. Like, for me, it's not very easy to steal like anything away from her, but I thought Colman really like just stood out and just was an interesting character that I thought I would like to see more of her.
I actually enjoyed a lot of the characters in this. The only two that actually did nothing for me were the dancers.
At the Countess
and Granny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot they were even there.
Yeah, I did too.
When at one point when they go in and he finally gets to interrogate them, I'm kind of like, oh, they're on board.
Exactly. Yeah. I thought they were just at the train station, you know, beating up photographers or something like that. And it was like, that was it to me. They were the weakest characters to me. I liked it. It was awesome. You know, it was great seeing the master in this. It was awesome. You know, it was just, there was just so much fun stuff. Derek Jacobi was just amazing. Penelope Cruz was Penelope Cruz, like she does in every role. And you know, I agree with Mike what he said about Olivia Colman. I didn't even know she was in this, and when I saw her on the screen, it was like, oh wow.
Well, it took me a second when I saw her on the screen, because I've seen Olivia in a ton of stuff, but you know, I'm watching, I'm going, holy crap, that's Olivia Colman. Like, it took me a little while to recognize her because her hair was different and all that, and I thought, wow. And then I just kept watching her because I thought she was really good.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, between her performance and between Judi Dench and I got to echo Josh Gad's what he said on one of the Graham Norton show, where he said, Dame Judi, he's more like Damn Judi Dench.
agreed.
It was fascinating. No, the one that took me a second to kind of suss out was William Dafoe's character, because I'm sitting there looking at him going, I don't remember a professor being on board. And then I was just like looking at him going, oh, you're that dude. You're the Pinkerton. You're the not Pinkerton.
Exactly.
I'm like, there we go. Thank you for dropping that horrible accident. it was funny because I've lived around different places around the world, and I'm sitting here looking at it going, you know, you're not actually pronouncing that word correctly. So when Rana calls him on it going, no, nobody would pronounce it like this. We pronounce it like this. I was just like, thank you. Thank you. Someone else noticed.
Oh, and I love the scene when Brana was talking to Olivia in German, so that way Judi Dench's character couldn't answer for her.
Oh, absolutely.
That was just wonderful.
And then like the little hesitations here and there where you could tell she kind of knew something more, but she didn't really want to say anything. But no, I think the parts that kind of just mystified me the most, other than the mustache protector, were just him sitting looking at Poirot sitting there looking at the picture of Catherine. And I'm like, okay, but why is this in the movie?
Yeah. That was just a little too much.
Slept with the director.
I was like, if you're going to put this in the movie, you have to do a better job of justifying its existence in the movie. So
Alex, let me ask you this. So with the cast not working, and did the mystery just not hold up for you then? Was the reveal? How did you feel about the reveal?
Okay, I will say this. Did not guess it. I had my pick of Michelle Pfeiffer's character when she was stabbed. There was a scream. She comes out. She's been stabbed. The murder weapon is right there. I leaned over to my wife and said, she's the killer. That was my reaction on the film. Mm-hmm. So like I put all of my chips on her to be the one who done it. And in a sense, I was kind of right. I just didn't realize that she had all the accomplices.
Well, the beauty of it is, no matter who you pick, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
There's a moment where everybody gets to feel good about themselves. It's like, yeah, I figured it out. No.
Or like when Judy whispered to me, she says, the butler did it. And because I knew the answer, I said, kind of, sort of.
I had a moment where I thought, I wonder if this is where the butler did it comes from. And you know,
No, I think the Butler did it actually comes from Wilkie Collins's The Moonstone.
Oh, there you go.
I think that's where that comes from.
But for me, I was like, you know, I put my money on my horse, which was Michelle Pfeiffer for that one. The reveal comes in a very unique way. I didn't see the pistol coming into play the way that it did. When the doctor decides that he's, you know, the governess can't take the blame for it, and he shoots Perot. He mentions that he's a sharpshooter, and then talks about the fact that he couldn't be a killer because he's a doctor. You're a sharpshooter who can't kill people? And you missed Perot?
Well, of course, I will say that I, at that point in the movie, my mother, from whom I inherited my love of murder mysteries from, mm-hmm. leaned over to me and goes, "Yeah, that's not in the book." And I was like, "Yeah, no, I know."
Yeah. Yeah.
I sat there and went, okay, on the one hand, I can kind of see maybe where your aim is a little off because you're emotional and you're not really focusing. But at the same point, he's like not even like a full 10 feet away from you.
Yeah.
Tiny gun
does not quite have the kick that you would think, but
yeah. Yeah, and it's one of those where I was like, okay, that shows choice. You didn't want to actually kill him. You maybe just wanted to scare him a little into shutting up. But still, it's one of those. I was just like, honey, no.
He was trying to choke him to death and screaming, "Why won't you die?"
I know.
And you know why he won't die? Slept with the director.
I mean, of course, Patrick Doyle's score was pretty badass.
Yes.
So I literally, my father. And he's a smarter man than this, leaned over and said, "Hey, do you think Doyle did the score?" And I'm looking at him going, "Dad, the number of scores that Patrick Doyle has done for people that are not Kenneth Branagh is very slim. The number of movies that Kenneth Branagh has acted and directed that he has not also had Patrick Doyle do the score for is also very slim." So... And then we saw the credits. I'm like, see, told you, Doyle did the score.
Wow, you guys are a chatty bunch at the movies.
There's a reason why my family sits in like the back row all the time.
Good to know.
Unless it's a Captain America movie, and then it's just because normally my glee cannot be contained. And if I'm going to fist pump in the theater, I'd rather like not, you know, be in the way of somebody else's view.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. No, it's cool. Look, I think we're getting down to the wire here. So I guess we'll go around, give it a rating of 1 to 5, and last words or last thoughts about the movie. And yeah, we'll start with our guest, Bethany.
I would give this a solid 4.5. I like what they did with the cinematography. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous movie. And some of those angle shots, while initially really weird, actually really worked for how they were telling the story and how they wanted you to come into the narrative. So yeah, solid 4.5.
Awesome. Ashley?
I'm going to give it 3.5. I really enjoyed it. It was fun to see something a little bit different with a big cast. It wasn't my favorite movie this year, so not going to end up on my best of the year list probably, but I did enjoy it, and I like to call it like a rainy afternoon movie. If you're stuck inside, it's a good movie to watch with a hot cup of tea. I probably will watch it again, so I'd say a 3.5 for me, and would recommend it to people that love period dramas and murder mysteries.
Excellent. Excellent. Alex, what about you?
It's an Oscar bait film. It'll get nominated for a whole bunch of stuff. It deserves none for the acting. 1.5 stars at best, and that's for the music and the cinematography.
Okay, fair enough. Mike, what about you?
Well, everyone said what I wanted to say except for Alex, so
he's not in the right groove
then. Exactly. Basically, I'm going to do a solid 4. And the only reason I didn't give it a 4.5 like Bethany did, that mustache took it out for me. It totally took it out. But literally, I was describing it to a friend yesterday, and it was, I told the person, it was a rainy day movie. It was a perfect rainy day movie. And truthfully, folks, I enjoyed it because it was a break from the superhero movies. It was a nice, you know, a nice,
literally, like one that we're showing, like right, we're seeing right in the middle of two of them.
Exactly. No, and that's part of the reason I chose this for us to do, because I wanted something different, and this was perfect, and it's beloved to me, and I think it lives up to the tradition in a lot of ways, and I'm looking forward to watching it over and over again, and I will rank this up with the BBC one they did on PBS.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 4. I thought it was really well done. I did like the acting performances in it. Could there have been enough of it? Yeah, but it, you know, these films have a certain structure, and Kenneth he works with the structure, and I think it was interesting enough. The fact that I didn't know who did it, that kept me guessing, and I was right there along with the movie. So I think I was maybe a little bit, you know, like they're guessing like who it was or how it had to end up. But I like the fact that not only is it about like who done it, but then once you find out who it was, what the repercussions of that are, and then what you do with that. And I thought the film did a really good job at wrestling with that. I enjoyed Brenner's performance so much so that I'm kind of sad because I got a feeling that this is a one and done for him as Perot. So we won't get a Death in the Nile or any others, I doubt. So the fact that he throws Death in the Nile at the end of it, even though logistically, I mean, it doesn't, like in the series, it doesn't happen right after this, as far as the novels or whatever.
That actually was one of my comments I was going to make, was that didn't make sense at all because the murder happens while he's on the boat.
Yeah, I know. I'm kind of like, yeah, I was like, by the time you get there, won't it be too late? Like, I just, yeah, I thought that was kind of a silly throwaway. I would like to see more. In fact, so much so that I've now been convinced that I'm going to seek out the BBC series and give that a try to see if I to watch those, because I enjoyed this so much. So it inspired me to do that. So so it gets a 4 for me. So, well, thank you all.
Pretty sure Netflix has the David Truse versions.
Ooh, thank you for saying that, because that's going to be my next thing. I'm like, where do I find them? I will seek those out. Thank you. Well, very cool. Thank you all. And we'll be right back with the ESO Connor.
Welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela. And this week, this geek girl is talking about the Los Angeles pop-up bar, The Beetle House. So I got a chance to spend some time in LA, and I got to attend some really cool conventions and visit some awesome food places and geeky spots. One of those places was the awesome restaurant and bar called The Beetle House. This Tim Burton-themed eatery has it all. Really cool visuals, actors dressed as characters from the different movies who are really into their character, a large screen showing scenes from different films, some cool performances from magicians and freak shows, and really, really cool looking themed food. While I was there, there was a Joker and a Willy Wonka walking around and interacting with the guests in the restaurant. These guys really had their acts right. They were fantastic and had some great jokes and interactions with me personally. The food was really good. I got the mac and cheese Sweeney Todd steak, which had a straight edge razor on it, and the apple pina colada. They also have a great themed drink list as well. It's a little pricey, but it's also on Hollywood Boulevard, so you can kind of expect that. Overall, a really, really fun experience. My favorite decorations in the bar or restaurant was the Oogie Boogie in the bar area, and all the really cool Beetlejuice decorations inside the restaurant. Well, thanks for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Well, you're going to have to listen to find out.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report.
Well, we've got a few events that are happening here in November, 18th and 19th. That's this weekend coming up in Atlanta is the Heroes and Villains Fan Festival. It is a, you know, it is a celebrity sign show, but there are some local talent going to be there. I know that J.R. Mounce is going to have a table there, and he just released a new Fried Pickle Noir book, so I'm excited to see that. And it's always fun seeing J.R. That would be worth it alone. But, of course, you got all the actors from Arrow and Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and a couple from Supergirl, too, I think are going to be there. And then Gotham and some others, too. So I'm going to be there. It looks like right now I'm going to be there Sunday only, but I could be there. I don't know. We just haven't. There's a couple other things happening this weekend. I have to see Justice League. So trying to figure out what's happening on the schedule. But I will be there. So if you're going to Heroes and Villains and you want to say howdy, please reach out to me. Send me a message on Facebook or the social media, and I will make sure that we can meet up somewhere and chat, because I always love encountering listeners, especially if you're a listener that just doesn't usually reach out, is not active in the Facebook groups or social media or whatnot. If you just want to like say howdy, thank you, or if you say, hey, you guys are doing this and I hate it, yeah, I like listening to that too. Not as much, but you know, I mean, I like opinions. I like talking to people about the show and other stuff too. So I'll be at Heroes and Villains next weekend or this weekend. The following weekend, which is November 24th through the 26th, is Chicago TARDIS. Unfortunately, I will not be there, but Nathan Laws of the 42 cast, the ESO show, as well as a frequent contributor to ESW, he will be in attendance. He's already listed some of the panels that he's going to be at, so you'll definitely want to check out the ESW group, the Air Station Who group on Facebook, because he's posted there what his schedule is, and as far as doing panels. But it's mainly about Doctor Who, and the Chicago area loves Doctor Who. They've been doing this convention for a while. It's a really, really great time. I wish I was going. But Nathan will also have copies of the ESO Tales of the Station Volume 2 book with him. They are shipping as we speak. They're on their way to him. So if you do see Nathan and you want to check out his story, it's right in the middle. Boom. He's got the middle spot in that book, and he holds it solidly too. It was great to have him contribute. His story's great. I definitely encourage people to check it out. He'll sign it for you and get a copy of it in person from Nathan at Chicago TARDIS. That's November 24th through the 26th. The couple weeks after that, I think it's actually the week after that, December 1st through the 3rd, is the Catoosa County Film Festival, and I will be there along with Tiki Zombie artist Peter Cutler. We will have a table there. We'll be selling Tiki Zombie stuff, as well as I'll have some ESO books there with me as well. We'll be enjoying the films that are showing. I'm not sure what the schedule is for the film festival, but it's starting to take shape. So you want to go to the website, check that out. There's also some media guests going to be there. I do know that I think Leanna Quigley has been announced, as well as Sid Haig and a couple of other folks. So should be cool to hang with those folks. Also, the bands are going to play. Radio Cult, as well as Possum Kingdom Ramblers, are going to be playing some sets there. So you can hear some music, watch some movies, say howdy. It's a great time. That is in Catoosa County. It's right below Tennessee, is my understanding. It's like right in that, kind of on the way to Chattanooga from here, I think. That's the way it was explained to me. I haven't actually looked at the directions yet. So I could end up in Nevada. I have no idea. But it is going to be interesting, and it's going to be fun. So I hope you'll join us for that.
Just remember, Mike, Don't make that left turn in Albuquerque. You'll be fine.
I never do. And December 17th is the Atlanta Comic Convention. It's a one-day show at the Marriott Century Center. It's a show that we love, and Mike and I will be there. Of course, Mike will be hanging around the Funko Pop figures, and I'll be wandering around aimlessly trying to avoid spending too much money, especially for the holidays. But it's December 17th, so maybe I'll do some last-minute holiday shopping there. You can do that. It's a great idea, especially from a lot of the local artists that are going to be there. You can get something unique for someone's stocking or yourself. So check it out, and that is AtlantaComicConvention.com. And those are the rest of the appearances for ESO Network folks for the end of the year. If you've got a convention that you are wanting to promote or you'd like us to help participate in for 2018, please reach out to us because we love talking about conventions.
So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. I want to thank our guests for being here. Bethany, you made it through the geek seat and your first movie review.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, guys. I mean, like I said, this chair is really comfy. These knots aren't bad, and, you know, I like the groove.
Oh, Alex's groove is always... I'm not even going to go there.
I'm just grinning from ear to ear over here, man.
Do you have any upcoming cons once you get out of the geek seat?
I think my next con will be HyperaCon, which will be in Nashville. Date to be announced. And that's one of the ones that I'm on the programming committee for. But... other than that, you can always find me online, Twitter, Facebook, my website, and or you can read some of my short stories on Patreon.
Excellent. And we will put up links to all that up on our show notes. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
As we like to say, she was a good sport. And, of course, our movie people, you made it through week number two, folks. Alex, it wasn't such an easy ride for you, but I appreciate it, my friend.
Oh, it's always a pleasure coming out and joining you. It's going to be fun for next week. And I had a good time this week. I just wish the movie had been better for me. That's all.
Understandable. Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
I know that I've got my next con that I know that I'm going to. And that's the Fanboy Expo in Knoxville next June. Otherwise, you'll be able to find me here. Under the couch, and obviously we're getting ready for Star Wars in a few weeks.
Oh yeah, very much. Ooh. So that is awesome. And of course, Ashley, fantastic review this week, my dear.
Oh, thank you. It's always fun to be on the show and have a place to post my reviews.
Excellent. Anything you want to shout out about?
Just that you can find my reviews on the ESO podcast website. We're doing on the Orient Express this week and then Justice League next week. So we'll see how that all turns out.
Oh, that's awesome. Can't wait to read it. And Mr. Mike.
As always, it's my pleasure.
Anything you're going to shout out about?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out real quick to a documentary that premiered on HBO last month, which I finally got around to seeing. It's directed by Susan Lacy, and it is called Spielberg. And it is a 2.5-hour look at the career of Steven Spielberg. Look, I know a lot about Spielberg, but there were some things in here that were new to me. And sometimes it's just amazing to sit down and look at everything that he has accomplished in his time on this planet. And it was fascinating. Really, they didn't, and of course, with his scope of films in 2.5 hours, it's difficult to go into that much depth, but I thought they really did a good job with the bigger picture as far as what his motives are for making movies and how they've changed and how he's progressed as a filmmaker and all that. Lots of interesting people that they talked to, almost all of his all of his, you know, actors and some of the writers and whatnot. And also there's a lot of what I hadn't seen before, a lot of footage of him in the late 70s with his group of Francis Ford Coppola, George Lucas, Brian De Palma, and he, their little group there, some interesting things about when George was making Star Wars and what they all felt about it. Some really they how they all kind of pitched in and they all had some competition, but it was friendly competition, and how like these four guys like really changed the industry as we know it. And Spielberg in a lot of ways still is going strong. I mean, we just saw a trailer for The Post, his new one, and of course we're getting ready for Ready Player One next year. So he's not slowing down anytime soon. So but if you get a chance to watch it, the documentary Spielberg on HBO, I'm not sure how you would get it otherwise, but if you got HBO, it's definitely worth a watch.
Awesomeness. My shout out is going out to my friends who are gamers, actually. Some of the games I play on the PlayStation 4 is Injustice 2, and they just announced a major crossover for the next pack to download on. And you are getting four heroes and a half shell actually joining the DC universe in the video game, at least. Mm-hmm. And you are getting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to be able to play, which is pretty darn awesome.
I was going to say, I happen to be watching the World Championships when they aired that ad, and everybody just went nuts for it. It sounds like the way that it's going to work is that they're not each a selected character, but rather the four at once in the game. And it's like that right there is almost reason for me to get a PlayStation 4.
You've said that for many games though, my friend.
I know that, and I still haven't done it, but this one might.
Okay. Cause I thought, you know, with the new Star Wars game coming out, I thought that one also was.
No, I can't afford any of the characters.
Yeah. Good point. Definitely a good point there. But yes, it's really awesome for Injustice 2, and it's going to make a fun game even more fun. I usually like playing like Captain Marvel or Shazam, and I also like playing sometimes Flash. It's a lot of fun different things to play, and it's just neat to do. And you know, Star Wars is coming out next week, folks, and I am actually very curious to see how it's going to be. All right. So with that being said, that's going to wrap up this episode. I want to thank everyone at home for listening. You could, of course, get involved. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. You know, we couldn't do this without you guys. We always say that, but it's true. People are joining the ESO group up on Facebook. You know, not just the, you know, Earth Station 1 group, you know, page we have, but we also have the ESO Network Facebook group, and lots of news stories, lots of people talking about different geeky stuff, post all the different podcasts from all the different shows. And, you know, we just have a great community up there. We'd love to get you guys involved with that. But we also want you guys to leave us feedback. Please, whatever you do, take 2 minutes of your time, hop on the iTunes, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, all these different places where Earth Station 1 is living. Please go ahead, rate us. You know, that's how we make our bread and butter. Yes, we need money, but you know, if people rate us, it's almost just as equally as good, because the more people rate us, the higher we go up in ratings. And that's how more people find us. That's how we get advertisers. That's how we get, you know, people supporting us. And it's just a great thing all the way around. And speaking of supporting us, thank you. I just wanted to thank you. People have been leaving feedback and such. It makes me happy every time I go up on iTunes or Stitcher and reading what people write about us. And, you know, overall, it's really good stuff about, except for what Alex doesn't like, you know, it's okay though. You know, it's an okay thing, but you know, we just have a great time with this podcast and we do it for you guys. You know, we talk and talk. Mike and I could just talk just in general, but to have us talking all about, you know, things and people listening, that's just even more special to me. And we do appreciate it. Of course, you can help support the station. We have, of course, the Amazon link right up on esopodcast.com, or you make it even easier. Just go to esopodcast.com/esoamazon. And, you know, go do all your shopping up there. You could still do Thanksgiving shopping. That's right, folks. You can go shopping for all your food, all your gifts, all your silverware, all your plates, you know, your decorations, or even Black Friday is right around the corner and Cyber Monday is right behind that. You know, it's, you know, everything, you know, you need, your friends at ESO would appreciate if you went shopping through us. And, you know, that's all we could say. We also have a brand new Tee Public store where you could get all kinds of really neat kind of t-shirts that feature ESO logos, ESO designs, and just really neat stuff up there. And we're going to have a Black Friday sale. Everybody's going to have a Black Friday sale. So why not Earth Station One? You know, we'll have it with the Tee Public store. It'll be a blast. So you can also reach that, of course, through the Earth Station One or the ESO network page. So check it out. Definitely worth looking at. Speaking of worth looking at, we are going back to the movies yet again next week. That's right, folks. We are going to be looking at Justice League. Finally, we are, after months and months and months, pretty much since Wonder Woman came out, we've been seeing bombarded with Justice League commercials and such. And finally, where you get a, you know, is this worth it? Is it not? This is a new version of the Justice League. This isn't Flash and Arrow verse. This is a brand new verse from DCU. And, you know, it'll be just interesting to see where it goes. I'm very curious to see. But until then, we will see you again next week. My name is Mike Faber. If I can get my words out of my mouth, it'd be a great thing. And we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace. And we're done.
Peace.
Woohoo.
Yay.
You've been listening to Earth Station One, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station One podcast. Peace.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.